Sport and Spice, where the chat is well seasoned, with Declan Byrne and Lavender Bai.
Yes, hello. How you doing, Lav?
Good to be here. How's your week been?
Week's been good. Yep. I had a really wholesome week. I'll tell you a bit about it in the highlight, low light in just a second. Happy International Women's Day as well.
Thanks.
To those who celebrate.
All of the women.
Serious question though, cupcakes aside.
I have not had a cupcake. This is my first year of not having a full-time job. I've not had a cupcake.
No cupcakes, no lectures, no talks. What is it like?
And Being a woman.
You can go. What is it like? And you can go into as much detail as you want, or as little, because this is an unwarned question. Being a woman in sport, how many comments are you turning off? How many DMs are you having to ignore? What is the tough side of being a woman in sports media?
I think it's interesting because I think we talk a lot about how far we've come, and we have come very far. But it's a conversation I have a lot with other women in the industry that I think sometimes we look at how far we've come and people have this impression of like it's all sunshine and rainbows, when in reality it's a big conversation we had this week about how women are still held to a very different standard to men. Men can get online, say what they want, have opinions, and it's fine. I have experienced myself and have witnessed other women going through the same thing where women are basically, it's a lot harder to have an opinion and not have it negatively impact your career.
So that there's much quicker discrediting of what you're saying.
Yeah, it's very easy to be in a situation where people don't want to work with women because maybe they have opinions. And obviously, like, the internet hate and stuff like that, but I don't think that is exclusive to women in sport. I think that's just being a woman on the internet. Small steps in the right direction, and hopefully by the time my career is over, it is a very different place to what it is now. But we persevere, and I think having an industry where there are so many women, we are really blessed that at least in the younger generation of women in sport, there seems to be this real solidarity that everyone sort of has each other's backs and we're all fighting the same fight and we refuse to be turned against each other in a way that has traditionally been pushed onto women to be like, you need to be best friends with the other women in the industry, but you also need to be willing to throw them in front of a bus to get ahead. And I think a lot of the next generation coming through have rejected that notion. And because of the privilege that all the women that came before us have given us, I think there's a really, really nice community of women in sport that all support each other.
Beautiful. Okay, so last one on this. Is it more difficult, more confronting, the challenges you receive like within workplaces and within, you know, you trying to get further, or the public side of things where, you know, you yourself post a lot online and that is your medium of how you connect and how you share your sport opinions? Which of those is the one you face more of an uphill battle? Is there one that stands out?
Perhaps a really hot take, and I want to preface this by saying I don't talk for everyone. I don't speak for everyone, sorry. I would say that there is a lot more gender barriers that I face behind the scenes in the industry than online. I think it's just a lot easier. I've grown up in media. I've been working in this industry since I was 17, and I've been online that whole time. So I am very used to people on the internet making stupid comments, and I think it just affects me a bit less, maybe, that you have to really come for a sore spot for me to be offended by what someone says about me on the internet. And I think with age, I have just learned to not share a lot about my family and a lot about my personal life because I don't want to give people access to things that can hurt me. So I think that's why the barriers behind the scenes and the barriers in my professional life impact me personally a bit more than some loser on Twitter saying that women shouldn't be in sport.
Yeah, cool. All right, let's get into the show. Thanks for sharing, Lav. Hopefully in a year, like you said, in 5 years, in 10 years, it just keeps getting better.
And fingers crossed.
And yeah, we don't have to be talking about this in 20 years. We'll see. All right, let's get into the show.
Highlight. Low light. I'm a loser.
Let's start low. What was the crappiest thing about the week?
The night's loss.
Hard to go past, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you build it up in your head, in public, on this show, how good the nights are.
I spent a lot of time. And to be honest, I went into last night's game just not even entertaining the possibility that we would lose. And then to lose to the Raiders. Like, if we lost to a good team.
If the Broncos came round one and beat you.
But we're playing against the Raiders without Jack Whiten. And we lost. And it was like an embarrassing loss. So that was my low light.
So did you sort of, are you writing off the season?
No, I just, I don't want to play with NRL anymore. I'm Andy and it's the Toy Story toy that I'm throwing away.
Okay.
I'm mentally checked out for the rest of this round. I don't want to see how any other team plays. No interest to me. Next week I won't know anything about.
To be fair to the Knights and tonight's fans, they kind of saved their own season last year by winning all those games at the back end. So
yeah, we're a back end team for sure. But I would like it if we were also a front-end team. It'd be nice if we just won every single game.
Just the whole package.
Yeah.
A whole-end team, top to toe.
What about you? What was your low light?
Low light was just flight delays. And I was thinking, like, I keep
Did you go somewhere?
Yeah, I'll tell you in a second. Oh. I went to Brisbane, so not far. But how easily we let airlines just get away with crap service. And it's nothing new. I mean, they post about their billion-dollar profits, yet they're charging us so much more and they're not performing. Okay. Highlights?
I was going to say NRL season is back, but throw it in the bin now. I don't want it.
It's not happening.
There's been no highlights for me. It's been a grim week.
Okay. Well, the reason I flew to Brisbane is tied into my highlight. I work with ABC Sport, ABC Pacific in particular is another part of my job. So I produce a show called Nesian Footy, all about the Pacific athletes in rugby league and rugby union. They make up close to half of both those leagues. It's a number that is impossible to look away from. They form so much of our entertainment due to their incredible skill. But I'm very lucky in that I'm just a white guy, but I get to be involved in this show and learn about their culture. And so we had 2 days of training of all Pacifica people in the team. And there's a couple of us bland white bread boys and girls who get to go and understand their level of connection, where if two white people bumped into each other in the street, they might find some connection. If a Tongan and a Samoan bump into each other in the street, they're finding connection that goes back generations in terms of the way that their family has given up things for them to go further, their faith, their just that level of connection and culture and that rich heritage they have, the way they can all get in a room together and feel so connected. It's really beautiful. So I was lucky to witness that. All right, next up, let's award some votes, Lavender.
One vote. Osha Ole.
The 3-2-1s.
And I'm going to get straight into it because although your Thursday night was disappointing, although your team didn't show up for you, the Swans showed up in opening round.
The Swans are always my saving grace.
So for the first time in a very long time, the AFL moved their first game of the season from Melbourne to Sydney. It's always Richmond Carlton at the MCG. It has been for years. But because the NRL launched in Vegas, they thought, let's try access some of these northern states, these typical league heartlands, and get in there and maybe try and win some fans. I don't know if they've done that, but at least it was a way for the game to show off itself and lead in Queensland and New South Wales. So the first game was last night and the Swans, they probably thought, look, we might not get another one ever again. We're going to go all out. So they had a huge parade of past players. Before the game started, they brought out all their premiership cups. So they've won 10 flags across their Swans and South Melbourne history. They were just showing off. They had fireworks.
They do put on a good show. Yeah. I went to their Guernsey launch a couple of weeks ago.
150 years.
Seeing all of the cups there, seeing all of the stuff. It is just a club with such rich history.
Rich history, and they were proud to show it. They were out and about just like flexing last
night. I do have
to
say, though, two things. Why is it round zero?
The reason it's round zero is because there's only 4 matches. So it's kind of like the leagues. It's a half round and then the teams get buys here and there. So kind of like by round 4 or 5, it's caught up with itself. They don't want to call it round one because, you know, however many teams, 10 teams aren't playing. It's very confusing.
I hate it.
Yeah, I don't think it's a great idea in terms of the split round.
But it certainly is an idea that they have had.
They've executed. We'll see how it goes in terms of expanding their market in New South Wales and Queensland. I don't know how they'll measure it. But
I do have to say, though, I did see a really funny comment. I don't necessarily think that the AFL are encroaching on NRL's territory. I'm a big league girl, but I also spent 10 years of my life in South Australia, so I respect the AFL. Everyone's pushing this narrative that they're like trying to steal NRL's ground. And I did think it was very funny that somebody interviewed Andrew Johns about it.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes, to be quite honest with you, no idea it was on. He's like, couldn't tell you the first thing, good for them.
Do you think that's true that he had no idea the AFL was starting?
I don't believe that Andrew Johns knows anything that's happening on any given day. I think Andrew Johns thinks rugby league and not a lot else.
So he also didn't know that it was like,
I don't think
Thursday.
Andrew Johns knew that it was a Thursday.
He didn't know
yesterday.
He'd missed breakfast yesterday. He didn't know it was his mum's birthday.
I don't think Andrew Johns knows his last name half the time.
Yeah, okay.
I love Andrew Johns, but like, I don't think he's the yardstick for like people living in New South Wales and their knowledge of sport.
Nor is he the yardstick of people that the AFL want to go after.
No,
and convert.
It would be very funny to get a Sharon in Andrew Johns' hands, though.
They're going after the next generation, and there's a Giants game on Saturday. It is sold out, which will be one of the biggest crowds they've ever had at Giants Stadium. They're playing Collingwood, so a lot of Collingwood fans would have no doubt travelled, but it's working in that regard. They're getting a huge crowd to the Giants' first game of the season. That wouldn't have happened if it was a regular round one fixture. Hey, we didn't even mention, by the way, before we continue with our votes, we've got Noemi Fox on today. We didn't even mention it.
I'm so excited to talk to her.
Oh, she's going to be so good. So Noemi Fox, if you've heard of Jess Fox, basically the greatest kayaker canoeist of all time, Noemi is Jess's younger sister, and Noemi is incredible as well in the water. But she's going to tell us all about how it's so limited to go to the Olympics, the pinnacle of their sport. It's so limiting
when
for
your sister
her.
Is when the best in the world.
Yeah.
Interesting, so, though, I was doing a bit of a Google search on her. That is a family of kayakers. Both her parents went to the Olympics. Her sister's Jess Fox. I'm so intrigued to just hear about like what life was like for her growing up.
So Noemi Fox coming up soon, but from one incredible woman in Australian sport to another, who's getting our two votes?
Oh, Elise Perry. She's done it again. She's smashed a car window at the cricket. Big hit. Straight in the sponsor car window.
Straight in the back window. So if you missed it, it was in the Women's Premier League. She clubbed a six through mid-wicket, and they had a sponsor's car sitting there, as they sometimes do. I often see it at golf tournaments.
Which also seems weird to me.
But it's usually behind the tee off, so it's in the safest position. But it's still putting a car where golf balls might go. And they put a car where cricket balls almost definitely will go.
I do think this has happened twice to Elise Perry now. I think the first time was an ambulance a couple of years ago. I know we don't talk about sponsors on this podcast, but she needs to be the face of like a windscreen repair company, surely.
Yes. I can see the ad where like there's a backyard cricket game going on and mum's car gets broken and they call up the company and out of the car
comes Elise Perry.
Elise Perry in her badly fitting polo.
I want to know how many windows she would have smashed in backyard cricket over the years.
Oh, yeah.
How many times her parents were like, Elise.
Between the soccer balls and the cricket balls, she would have done some damage to houses.
Oh, yeah.
I hope they weren't renting. 3 votes. Lavender, this is a heartwarming,
a
beautiful
story. A love story for the ages.
A rich one, too. So Alex de Minaur, our best tennis player at the moment, he won the Mexico Open during the week, which was a game that finished at about midnight of where he was. He then flew straight to the US the next morning. I think he got up at 4 a.m.
It was 6 o'clock flight.
6 o'clock flight to watch his girlfriend, Katie Bolter, win the San Diego Open.
Incredible. Like, are we commending men for doing the bare minimum? Probably.
On International Women's Day.
My standard for men now is if you're not finishing work at midnight and then getting on a 4 o'clock flight to come and see me at work, come stand in the studio while we record Sports Voice, I don't want it.
Far out. We're going to have someone lurking in the studio. I'm going to say that's weirder than
Very
the other
sleep
option.
Deprived.
So probably a great, like the most successful week a couple had in the whole world. They won like nearly $1 million between them in 2 days' work. Can you imagine your bank account? You just open, clicking refresh, swiping down, and the bank account just has their joint account, which I don't know if they'd have at this stage of their relationship. Still pretty new. Can you imagine seeing it just bump up 900K? Speaking of power couples, we've got our bingo card coming up later on in the show. So we're going to run you through some of the ones we've got on there, As we said last week, if you've got some ideas for our sporting bingo card, we did it last year. It was a hit.
Sport and Spice with Declan Byrne and Lavender Bai.
Why don't we get to the biggest thing of the last week? It is the NRL launch in Vegas. Have you ever been to Vegas, by the way?
I have.
Yeah? I haven't been.
I'm really glad. I went before I turned 21. I was like 16, 17. So I got to experience all of Vegas without the alcohol and gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually so much.
There's not much left, right?
No, there's actually really? Heaps. Like, we went to heaps of Cirque du Soleil shows.
Yep.
Ate a bunch of food. We went to the Grand Canyon in these like bright pink Jeeps. Went to Hoover Dam. Did heaps of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at you. You sound like you were converted. So the NRL were launching their whole season in Vegas. Whether it was a ploy to get more American fans, whether it was just a publicity stunt to get everyone in Australia that liked any form of football to watch that, do you think it worked?
I think it provided the spectacle. Everyone was in Vegas. All of the marketing teams were in Vegas. It did really put – everyone was talking about NRL Vegas. Would I, as a Knights fan, have been talking about what the Roosters are doing had it not been all in Vegas and been a big show? Probably not. So I do think it worked.
Was it a lot
of money? Yeah. But the NRL have money at the moment.
I think it's a wholehearted success. Like you say, people were talking about a game that they may not have cared about otherwise. People wanted to watch it to be part of history, to at least say, yeah, I watched the first Vegas game. And if it's going to happen for 5 years, if it goes really well by the fourth and fifth year, maybe they will make some money. I don't think their care was whether they made money or not. It was to expand the game, to share it, to take what they think is the greatest game in the world to America and try and just latch a bit of that audience. The games were good too as well, like high scoring in the Manly South game. The Broncos losing to the Roosters was an upset. It was exciting. So on field, brilliant. So the one thing which we haven't talked about yet was the incident on field, which to me, looking in my media, looking on social media, marred the whole Las Vegas experience, and the NRL would have been pissed at what happened, because for days later, and we'll still talk about until Monday, there was one incident that has overshadowed how big a success the NRL had in Vegas. And it was the Spencer Lemieux and Ezra Mam incident. If you've missed it, basically there was a racial slur on field by Spencer Lemieux to Ezra Mam. He reported it to the referee. And in the days since they've returned home, Lemieux has taken ownership of it. He's admitted he said the word and he's felt guilty about it and apologized unreservedly. And he's also said, and so have the Roosters, that Ezra Mam is the one we should be focusing on and making sure he is okay in this situation. What did you make of the whole incident, Lav, and what's come out in the last few days?
Obviously, my opinion on this is not the most important voice in the conversation by any means. I do think it was severely disappointing. I think it prompted a lot of conversation about, like, there was just a lot of negative talk. I saw that Ezra Mam had to turn off his Instagram comments almost immediately. There was a lot of hate being thrown in his direction. And I just want us to be past this era of people saying these things on the field, people saying these things off the field. And I think the post-match press conference was what really got me. Not press conference, the post-match interview, where he basically told Ezra Mam that they're staying at the hotel if he wants to fight about it. You know where to find me.
And so he said it's all fun and games as well. He said,
yeah,
you know,
it's all fun and games.
Idea
and
of what happens on the field stays on the field.
Spencer did come out and say that he didn't mean it in a racist way, which make of that what you will. We all know well and truly that it was a slur in that context, and this has happened time and time again. So it's not as if this is something that he could have been totally unaware of. He has apologized now. I do think there needs to be a strong punishment, though, that comes down. We need to really stamp this out. We've had all these players come out in support of Ezra Mam, but I do think it really just put a dampener on what had otherwise been. We sent, 70-odd NRL players to Vegas and nothing went wrong until this moment. The NRL would not be happy.
Yeah, they wouldn't be happy. And there's a good couple of points you brought up. The way he says, I didn't mean it in a racist way. Unfortunately, when you use those words, they carry weight, and it's about how it's interpreted.
And you, as I've seen many people say, it's about how Ezra felt.
Yeah, you lose that power. When you say the word, it's what the person interprets
Absolutely.
That word as.
And I think Ezra Mam immediately did the right thing. He reported on the field. He's been nothing but right in his way of handling this.
And supported as well. Sounds like the Broncos, the NRL, everyone has got around Ezra
heaps
Mam,
of,
other
heaps
players.
Heaps of people from other teams yep. have gotten around him. Everyone has basically been like, this is horrific. There's no place for this in sport. I'm glad that Spencer has owned it. It did take him a while to come around, but he's apologized unreservedly. He's pleaded guilty, and I think they're now just going to let whatever happens at tribunal happen. But it is just a massive dampener on the sport, and I think it goes to show that every time this happens and we sort of get over this hurdle, we go, oh, yep, we've all learned the lesson. Everyone's going to be better. And then 6 months later, a similar thing happens, and it just feels like it keeps happening and happening. And I wonder how much we're really growing when you think it wasn't that long ago that these comments are being thrown at Latrell Mitchell last year. Similar things happened. So it's like, I hope that this is the final line in the sand where we stop seeing this happen, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, so it is all about education from here at all levels, and it is educating if you're listening now and you have a young kid, whoever says that word or any sort of casual racism, of teaching them early. The other one I want to point out, and I wasn't a big fan, was the Roosters coach Trent Robinson, also in the aftermath of the game, sort of hearing about it, and I know he was pushed a few times, but he said something along the lines of, Ezra's adamant, is he? That doesn't mean it's right. Doesn't mean what was said was right. At that point, you shouldn't, as a coach, and I know they want to constantly defend their players, but at that point, you have to be able to separate yourself as a coach, constantly defending your players, to this is a bigger issue. Just keep saying no comment. If that's all you want to say, if you don't want to say, if Ezra is right, we will reach out to him and we our thoughts go out to him, and that's something that shouldn't be on the footy field. If you don't want to go to those lengths, fine, in that aftermath, but don't even subtly say that it might
not
be true.
Let's not. And I think the thing is, in the immediate aftermath, there were so many opportunities for Spencer to come out and go, in the heat of the moment, I've completely done the wrong thing. I own it. That's not what happened. It wasn't until he got back to Australia and it had blown up into this massive thing that he came out and said, look, I was wrong. I apologize unreservedly.
Yeah, which, look, I'm not so worried about the time it took, as long as he came to that conclusion himself, and it sounds like he is committing to growing and learning and will be better for it. You know, let's not hang Spencer Lenu out to dry forever. He has come forward and unreservedly apologized. So I think we got to the right result. There are a couple of things along the way, disregarding the original racial slur, which is the most horrible part of it, but it's happened. There are a couple of things in between that we could have done better.
There's a couple of things
well.
With the handling that I think that needs to be addressed.
Let's move to another racism issue that came up in sport this week. Sam Kerr earlier in the week was charged by British police. This was a shock to everyone. Apparently, it was alleged that it was a racially aggravated harassment of a police officer that occurred a little while ago.
Last January.
And they've taken a lot of time to find and press this charge. And when this first came out, I think a lot of people were like, what? Oh no, what's Sam done? Like, this is our cultural sporting hero at the moment, Sam Kerr. She has been for years. And then it came out that she called him, I'm not going to say the second word, but basically said a white something. We don't need to say the second word. But the racism that is alleged.
Let's add the context that the second word that we're not saying is under no circumstances in any interpretation a slur.
No, it's not racist at all. It's just a word you would call someone who you don't like.
Yes.
It's a strong word. It's not. It's irrelevant because the word that this police officer is worried about is white.
Yes.
Sam Kerr, a person of colour, calling a police officer a white something.
So there's a lot to unpack here. For starters, it took me a while to piece together. I thought this was this January. This was January 2023.
This was over a year
ago. Pre-World Cup.
Yeah.
So it took them 12 months to decide on a charge, which to me, it's very interesting that it took an entire year for the police force to work out on what the charge is going to be, and this is the best they could come up with. I've seen two really good comments. One was the fact that everybody is very publicly sharing the quote of what she said, allegedly said, with no second thought, generally like shows that it's not racist. No normal person in their life looks at that and goes, that is a racist comment. But I think the thing that people are missing is that racism, there's a definition that someone penned that is like racism is prejudice plus power. The big lacking factor here is Sam Kerr as a gay woman of colour does not hold power over a white police officer. No matter which way you paint it, there's no power struggle that Sam Kerr is above a white police officer in this situation.
So the last thing I'll say on this is that, and for people who, you'll see these comments, I bet you in the future, is that, well, why didn't it happen when Sam Kerr called that police officer white? Is that the word isn't just a word. So racism not only has that element of prejudice and power, it has the element of history. That word, whatever the racist slur is, has decades, centuries of history to make it racist. It's not racist because of the color of the skin. It's racist because of the acts of people in power across decades, centuries. So Sam Kerr saying that police officer is a white whatever doesn't have the context.
There's not
of,
systemic there's oppression not, exactly. over decades and centuries behind it.
Anyway, we're getting far away from sport, but hopefully that'll sort itself out. Because it was quite ridiculous when it came out.
It is worth noting that her lawyers are trying to get the entire charge dismissed.
Yes, which means she will have to go to court, I think, next February.
Which means that this would have been dragged out for 2 years.
Mm. Quickly, before we get to Naomi Fox, we've got this bingo card. Let's read out a couple of ideas that we've had to put on it. So we did this last year, a sporting bingo card of stuff that might happen, some crazy things that almost definitely won't happen, but if they do, amazing. That'd be fun.
We called it.
Okay, so let's put a few on there. Tottenham make Champions League. That would be huge if they make top four in the EPL.
Yeah, could be hit or miss. I'm interested to see how the rest of Ange's season goes. A non-bird animal on the on any sporting pitch. So we're talking a dog, a snake.
Mm-hmm. So there was a snake last week, but it's from now.
From now.
How about this? And we've talked about Nathan and Mary quite a lot. They do like a joint media thing,
whether a podcast, it's like
a four-page magazine spread,
Sunday magazines.
They're both talking about their love.
Max goes to Mercedes.
Oh yeah, you think that's a possibility?
Given everything going on right now, wouldn't be shocked. We've got Lewis Hamilton to Ferrari. I'm done trying to predict what happens in Formula One.
Mm-hmm. This happened a couple of times last year. Once at the Gabba, notably, the lights go out at a major Australian sporting event. Someone doesn't pay the bills. Let's get that one on there. One more for us before we get to Naomi Fox.
NRLW Knights three-peat.
We nearly went 5 minutes without you mentioning the Knights. All right, let's get to Naomi Fox. Up next, her Olympic dream.
Sport and Spice with Declan Byrne and Lavender Bye.
The next guest is our first canoeist slash kayaker on Sport and Spice, and fingers crossed, a name we might be hearing more as we get closer to the Paris Olympics. Born into a family of kayakers, I'm guessing she had no choice but to jump in the boat, but has luckily found success in it, winning medals at World Championships, including gold in the team event at London in 2023 with her sister Jess. Thank you so much for joining us, Naomi Fox.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here and honoured by such a deep and well thought out intro, so thank you.
So we like to kick things off with a fun little get to know you game. Do you have your phone handy?
I actually do.
If you can open up your contacts for us.
Gosh, okay. Yeah.
So the way this works is we give you a letter and a number.
Okay, so why don't we go to the letter R?
R.
Six.
Okay, let's go six down from R. Who have you landed on?
Really random. Okay, well, actually a fellow athlete, Riley McGowan. So he is in athletics, and we work together at Sport Integrity Australia as education presenters.
So did you say that you work for the Sport Integrity unit as well as, is that your job outside of canoeing?
No, so that was my first, I want to say, like official job. So it was...
That feels like a very official first
job. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was ASADA at the time, so Australian Sports Anti-Doping Agency, and now it's Sports Integrity Australia, and they were basically going through a restructure where they wanted to hire a bunch of athletes to deliver education sessions on anti-doping and nutrition and supplements. So it was actually a really great first job in a sense, and got to chat with so many different groups of young athletes and educate on the importance of, you know, supplement checking, making sure it's HASTA verified. It was a really great job, actually, and yeah, made some good friends.
Yeah, right. So these are those people, like when there's a drug scandal, when someone is caught doping, you know, that's the only time we hear about it, right? As non-athletes. And usually, yeah, you hear of ASADA and WADA. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing, Noemi, you weren't privy to, you know, or the drug test results, or which athletes were on two strikes.
No. Unfortunately, they didn't give us any juicy, you know, gossip or intel. But, you know, it's funny having worked for them and now I still, you know, get tested and get the knock on the door at 6 a.m. to do a drug test. And they're like, okay, so do you know about us? And you're like, yes, I've, you know.
Like, I used to work for you.
I'm permanently on the good list.
So tell us about that. I was speaking to someone recently and they explained that you need to be able to tell them where you are every single day of the year and they can just show up. What is the most random or inconvenient time they have knocked on your door?
Honestly, 6 a.m. I don't think it gets worse than that when you get a phone call and you get a knock on your door and it's 6 a.m. and you're like out of it and you don't even have time to get ready for anything, and then they're just there and they see you and you're in your pajamas. And then when I was living at home and then the whole family's awake and trying to have their breakfast and you're there.
Oh, your family would have had the worst between you and Jess. They would have been like,
And then honestly, 10 p.m. I remember one time, actually pretty recently, I'd already gone to the bathroom, done everything, and then get the call and I have nothing to produce as a sample. And so they stayed until 11:30 and then I didn't you have to do 90 mils. I did 60 and couldn't do anything else. And then, so you just have to keep hydrating and waiting so you can produce that 90 mils. So anytime quite inconvenient.
So really. They're sitting there and you're drinking water. What's the small talk like with those people while honestly, you're working up a wee?
Honestly, the small talk is, you know, when you're in the bathroom and you're just, you've got stage fright and you're like, so whereabouts do you live? The high-pitched voice and yeah, it's funny, you know, it's just, it gets a little bit easier, but you get more efficient, but it's still sometimes when you explain it to non-athletes, you think, yeah, it is, it's a funny thing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, we'd love to chat about weeing for the whole episode, but it's not why we got you on. Let's chat about your Olympic dream. How long have you had it? And also, what does the next, you know, 5-6 months look like in terms of your qualification and whether you will get to Paris?
So I guess the Olympic dream, it's always been there in the background. But in our sport, there's only one person that can go to the Olympics. So for the past two Olympics, I've been the Olympic reserve. And obviously my sister is the greatest of all time. And so it is a bit of a blocker in front of me in that sense, but this is the first year where there's actually extra spots available in a global quota qualification event that's happening in June, and that's specifically for the kayak cross. So I'd say for the past year, there's really been like we have a shot, we've got confirmation that there's going to be extra quotas. So this is a project that I really want to pursue and give it my all. And I think, you know, I've seen a huge shift and change in myself as I think not only an athlete, but also a person, having that Olympic door open, no matter how small it could be, or, you know, no matter how hard that sort of top three podium at that event to go to the games is, it's still been incredible to have that dream come alive and have an opportunity to turn that into a reality this year. So yeah, it's been a really huge shift in terms of, you know, you wake up with, obviously it's a huge immense privilege to go to the World Championships and represent your country there, but I do think that when you've got a chance to go to the Olympics, especially for a small sport like us, like that's the pinnacle. It changes the way you train, your motivation, the way you wake up every day. So it's been a good journey so far, and definitely on track and improving. And had the World Championships last year in London, where I came eighth and then came fifth at the Olympic test event. So on paper, you know, really tracking well. And I actually head overseas for a training camp in Paris next week, which is super exciting. But that event will be in June, and I'll have to make a podium to go to the Olympics, basically. And it's a race for anyone that's not yet qualified. So lucky for me, my sister will not be there. And anyone that has already qualified for the Olympics and has a quota to their name per se, won't be at that race. So it will be, yeah, a huge sort of event for me in terms of, you know, never having experienced that sort of pressure and performing when it matters. You know, this is the one shot to, it's like I call it the race for $1 million, really. So it's really exciting to be working towards that this year.
So what's it like, you and Jess obviously quite close in age, what is the relationship between you like when it comes to stuff like this? Is there like a big competitive nature? Are you guys, obviously you're supportive as sisters, but how has that changed and evolved throughout the years, especially now that you could very well both be at the Olympics?
We've always been close. I think, you know, it's the nature of our sport. When you go overseas for 6 months of the year, it's really great to have someone that you're close with. And obviously as training partners and sisters, I think earlier in those younger teenage years, I didn't really care much about, or I think, you know, there was a little bit more, not tension, but, you know, just teenage sisters fighting, not interested in each other, not cool enough for each other. And then I think as we've matured, you know, the relationship's definitely shifted. And when you go through such intense life events with someone, you know, obviously Tokyo 2020 Olympics, watching her win gold and being there, I think being able to share that and see someone's hard work just, you know, come to fruition and sharing those really intense emotions, it really builds a bond. And you know, she really does try to help me. I think for her, you know, it's also quite hard in a sense, being like, okay, well, I'm blocking someone's Olympic dream, but it's also, you know, I'm not going to give it away. No one would do that either. So I think this year there's definitely been a shift in her really trying her best to, you know, help me and elevate my performance as well. And I seeing how much this means to me. So that's been really incredible. I mean, throughout the whole training partner years, you know, she's always been so generous with her time and always wants to help me. And I'm definitely nipping at her toes much more at our domestic selections. You know, won a few races in front of her and then a few seconds behind. So for me, it definitely shows that I'm closing the gap. And then obviously, you know, it's amazing to be able to train together and train with the greatest of all time and have that reference, but then have her as well, you know, be my training partner in a sense and help me as well in towards this Olympic dream, and also just off the water as well. So more terms of like, you know, mental preparation, how to handle that sort of pinnacle pressure and perform under pressure as well. So it's really great to have that sort of mentor and someone you can speak to. And I do, you know, as much as it is hard to think, oh, there's just one spot, and in swimming you see 200 people go, in athletics you see so many people go, the reality is that it is what it is essentially, and it does suck to be kind of feel like you just can't get in front of the greatest of all time or can't have your shot. But I know that it's also made me a great athlete today, and I've, you know, have a shot still. So it's definitely been, I think, a shift of perspective and collaboration as well. So yeah, it's been really good to go through this experience with her by my side.
I totally, like, having watched Jess at the Olympics, I didn't realize that it was one per event. That is so brutal. And you're in such a unique situation in that you've grown up with this person. Like you said, she's the greatest of all time, yet you desperately want to, you know, fulfill your dreams as well. That must be tough mentally. Did you have to sort of sit down, whether it was with your family, with Jess, with whoever it was, and just sort of talk it out? Because that's such a hard situation to live with when you both have these competing dreams.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you go through waves of different emotions that you deal with. And I think earlier in my career, it was harder to, like, you know, watching someone always be successful and then you're not successful and you think, you know, how come I didn't get these genes? Why do I do this? And then, you know, I built definitely a sense of purpose and reason as to why I do that. And that definitely shifted the narrative and how I approached everything. Today it is, I'd say the hardest thing is not seeing Jess go to the Olympics, but it's seeing, you know, people that I'm better than or that I beat regularly at races and seeing them get a shot and easily make it as well. But, you know, that's, the reality is there's other countries where there's a world champion that's also barred, like the reigning world champion can't go to the Olympics because they were beaten at their selection event, or, you know, they also have the greatest and an Olympic champion in front of them. So there's a lot of people that are in our situation, and it is incredibly frustrating when you think, oh, how come they get a shot? Like, that's so unfair. But I guess you just have to come to terms with it. And yeah, definitely speaking with, you know, family members and our sports psych. And it's funny, I do remember my mum saying, you know, the Olympics, it's not the be all or end all. It's not as great as some people make it out to be. But, you know, I think one, accepting that, that's definitely true. You see some great athletes that can never go in our sport, but it's also, you know, you still want to make that opinion for yourself and go there. So I think, yeah, the hardest thing is definitely out of like, not pure jealousy, but being like, damn it, like, I can't believe, you know, I can't go there or even have a shot. And so for me this year being like, actually, I do have a shot, that has just lifted and changed everything for me. And no matter how small that kind of seemed at the time, you know, now it's definitely, I'm improving and it seems to be opening and more achievable than I initially thought. So that's definitely something that has, you know, switched my mindset and focusing on the opportunity.
Your dad competed for Great Britain and your mum competed for France. Was Australia the only real, was that the obvious choice for you, especially when Jess is already doing it? Mm. Was it ever a thought to go, maybe I'll go represent mum or dad's country able to compete?
It's a really great question. And it you know, it actually hasn't. And I don't want to say it's like that I haven't been, you know, opportunistic or anything, but I think, you know, Australia has invested so much in me, in my career, from being, you know, a little junior and first entering the New South Wales Institute of Sport to then going on my junior trips and then under 23 years and now in the senior team. You know, I have thought about it before. I think, you know, my mum in France, and I have such a huge connection to France, unfortunately more so than England. I don't know how the English genes didn't push through, so sorry to my dad. But yeah, definitely, you know, my grandpa actually got us all into the sport. He got my mum into the sport. We have a club in Marseille that he founded that's still going. And so, you know, there was a thought potentially maybe, you know, moving to France, and my grandma, that would make her the happiest ever. But at the end of the day, you know, those countries might be a little bit easier. They don't have someone like Jess that has dominated for such a long period of time. But essentially, it is really the sport in Australia that has helped me over the course of my career so far, that I could never, like, going to the Olympics would be a way to give back to the sporting system that has invested in my development, also into, you know, my development as a person. And we really do have a great sporting landscape here as well. So it's kind of the choice that I've made, that, you know, if I don't go, the career can still be incredible. And it's just, it is what it is. But hopping countries is what some people do in our sport. And it's just something that I don't personally relate to, if someone like a system, a country has helped you so much and turned you into the athlete that you are today. You know, the Olympics is representing your country and your nation. And if you don't have that deep tie, and I don't know, that history behind it, for me, that's personally something I just have come to terms with and don't think I do. But I know that if I do go to the Olympics in Paris, I'd probably be representing France and Australia internally as well. And it would feel like a home Olympics.
Sorry, England. Not representing England at all. Sorry.
No, yeah, yeah.
Even subconsciously.
Sorry, Dad.
Yeah, you know, still love the country. But yeah, no, I should add England in there.
So, like, something that a lot of people don't realize when they watch the Olympics every 4 years is everything that goes into it before that, for those 4 years, for that sacrifice. When that dream became such a more real possibility for you, what did you have to change in your life in terms of your time, your jobs, the money, the outlay, in order to commit to this dream?
Quite a few things. First of all, the biggest thing that I had to sacrifice was actually competing in the World Championships in 2023 in London in my two main disciplines as well, so the canoe slalom and the kayak slalom. And that was because of the quota qualification system, that if you got you could only get one spot to your name. And if you got a spot to your name, then you can't get another quota. So essentially that meant that if I'd raced in my two categories, that I would be disqualified from racing in this June event, which is my only shot at going to the Olympics, knowing that Jess was already pre-qualified for all the other categories.
Okay. So as in, if you got it, Jess would have just taken that one spot.
Jess would have taken the one spot and I wouldn't have been able to race in this spot in June. And I would just be on the bench with no opportunity. So
that makes sense. We were reading about that earlier and we were like, we're trying to piece together how it all works.
So you have to say no and put all your eggs in that basket of that cry across.
That was quite hard because I'd made finals at the World Championships the year before. I'm great on London and where the World Championships were. And it's also, you know, what I've been training for, and not going to the Olympics, the World Championships is your pinnacle event. So I still had the kite cross, and that was kind of my reality check that, okay, well, if I want to go to the Olympics, then I'm from this World Championships and I'm a kite cross athlete and not doing three disciplines, but fully focusing on this one, as well as the kayak teams, which we won gold in. So that was an incredible kind of moment for me to still be able to, you know, experience that at the World Championships. And also changing, my lifestyle. So cutting down, I was working full time. I definitely loved it there and felt like it was such a good career move for me and had great friends, but I just couldn't handle the full time and knew that I had to drop down to 2 to 3 days a week elsewhere to kind of just focus on being an athlete. And, you know, I guess there's just so many other little sacrifices you make in the lead up to everything. So not going to certain social events, you know, learning to understand that rest is more important sometimes and saying no to a lot of things and being comfortable with that. And then, all the tiny sacrifices you make along the way as well, from, you know, moving to your training side and missing out on a lot of fun times as a young adult as well, or sometimes what I feel is like a lot of career opportunities. But the thing is, you know, it's a choice that you make when you have a goal that's so big in life.
So Olympics are obviously only every 4 years. Are we looking forward? Is Brisbane next? No.
LA and Brisbane. Yeah.
Are we looking forward? I guess both you and Jess, 4 years from now, is that a goal for you moving forward? Especially because she's 3 years older than you. Is that sort of another opportunity, or are you both sort of looking at this as like the one?
I'm not thinking that far ahead. I do hope that when that time comes, Jess will have a break.
I'm like, love my sister, but I hope by then she's retiring.
But I think, you know, it's funny when you're younger, you have a perception of age and you think, oh, you know, by the time I'll be 30, like that will be too old. But, you know, I guess the time when you get older, you think, okay, no, that's definitely still young. And my mum won an Olympic medal when she was 34 and pregnant with me at the time. So technically.
Technically you've won an Olympic medal.
Exactly. That's how I see it. So I think, you know, I'm definitely enjoying the journey so much more now. I feel like I'm only kind of getting to the level that I want to be at and seeing that huge progression. I feel like I have so much left in the tank. And so I do think that LA will be on the cards. Haven't been to the US either. So we have the World Championships in 2026 there. And I'll just kind of see where the journey takes me. But focusing on Paris for now, and then definitely won't rule it out, whatever happens.
You mentioned holidays just then. Is there a holiday that is in your sights that is an extra bit of motivation, somewhere you want to go that you're like, 2024, end of 2024, I'm going to Mexico, whatever it is?
Oh, that would be nice. I'd say end of 2024, skiing. I only just kind of got into skiing later in life. So didn't grow up skiing because we're a summer sport. We're constantly just chasing summer. And lucky to go to some really incredible and stunning locations with the sport. So always kind of feel like it's a little bit of a holiday sometimes. But I would say skiing end of December. Would love to go back to the French Alps and do a bit more cross-country skiing, which I do pitch to my team as altitude training camp.
Yes. So. Yeah. Expense that.
Speaking of France, you were born there, but you left quite young. How familiar are you with the country? One, for the Olympics, but also for me personally, I'm going in a few weeks. What's the best?
Are you looking for travel tips?
Yeah, give me the travel tips.
Okay, well, a bit biased here, but the South. I mean, I was born in Marseille, south of France, and that will always be home to me. I think it is funny, you know, moved at the age of 2, but still such a huge connection to that place. My whole family is still there. I go every single year. My nan calls me every day.
Oh, really?
She reminds me. I'm lucky, have been lucky to go back every single year since we moved to Australia. So I do spend quite a bit of time there. France is so incredible. I think it's such so diverse and there's so many things to see. I know a lot of people don't like Paris, and they don't like the training course that we have there, but I'm the opposite. I love Paris. I think, you know, if you know the history, there's so much to see, those back streets, like it's just such an incredible city. And yeah, I don't know, but I would say there's a bit of rivalry between the South and Paris, and I'm definitely team Marseille and will be for the rest of my life. So definitely add that to your bucket list and go see the Mediterranean, like little creeks and just the ocean, the sea. It's just stunning. Yeah.
Marseille is a long way from Penrith. It's very different. I'm sure the lure of
they
France
do call
and
it, they call it the Penrith the of France. Penrith.
Is there anything similar when you go to Marseille, you're like, oh, that reminds me of Penrith?
Who is the Nathan Cleary of France?
You know, I think what does remind me, and I'll veer a bit away of Penrith, but it's a national park. So Marseille is also a huge national park, and I can run from my home to the national park. And where I grew up in Ligne, which is outskirts, well, I guess Penrith outskirts, I can run to the Blue Mountains National Park as well. So really grateful to have grown up in two areas that are just so stunning, and there's so much to see and there's so much to do activity-wise as well. And, you know, I think here it's funny, Penrith definitely gets such a bad rap, but then when the internationals come from Poland and Slovakia, they're like, this place is amazing. I love it here. You have, you know, an amazing course. You have the Blue Mountains. You can go to the beach, and then you have a mall, a huge mall. So it's funny. I think it's all about perspective, and yeah, definitely lucky to have grown up in two beautiful areas. And yeah, similarities, not that much, apart from, I'd say, the national park, the food, nice. Nothing compares.
The food. You know? Oh, that is amazing. Well, we've taken up so much of your time. We so appreciate you sharing so much of your Olympic dream, and it must be, you know, scary to have that one event, that $1 million event that you talk about. So we will be watching when it comes to June. Before we let you go, we like to ask everyone who comes on for a little song choice. Have you got something that might represent you, that's getting you through training, anything you want to put on right now?
I do. I mean, I had to think about this because I was like, do I go for, say, Fred Again, who's in the country right now, or do I go for Taylor Swift, who I just saw? And so, I mean, I can't say it's getting me through training. We put a playlist to get ready for the concert during gym, and you know, All Too Well didn't really help me with the bench press. So. But I'd have to say one song that I was disappointed that she didn't play that I do love at the moment is New Romantic. So I'll keep with the Taylor Swift.
That was on my list as well. I was like, give us secret song.
Didn't
come
out.
That was a hard choice. That was a hard choice.
Okay. Maybe you need a Fred Again remix of Taylor in the gym to sort of pump it up.
There we go.
See if we can make that happen. All right. Noemi, thank you. Good luck. And yeah, appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks again to Noemi Fox, and good little song choice there from Noemi. Bit of T-Swift for you.
We love T-Swift.
Happy with that. Let's get to this. It is our game called Connect 2.
Go for it.
I win.
Connect 2.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Connect 2.
Great
the
game.
The intro song always gets me.
So this game, I give two names, or Lav gives two names, to sporting athletes of any sport, any description, from any point in history, and you have to connect them. The one for you today, I'm going to go straight to your broken heart. Kaelin Ponga, you've got to connect to Candace Warner.
You can't give me cricket?
Well, you can throw stuff at me and I can confirm things, but you need to talk me through your school of thought. Where can you go
My
with Kaelin Ponga?
My school of thought is all I know is Candace Warner was an Iron Woman.
Yes.
And she's married to Dave Warner.
Great. So that is the connection.
And she works in media. So Dave Warner's the connection?
Dave Warner's the connection. You're on the right track. So you've got to get from basically cricket to rugby league. I know you don't like cricket, but these are people that you know and love in your life that potentially can make these connections.
I cannot stress to you how little I know about Dave Warner.
That's fine. You just have to know that he played cricket, which you do.
Can I phone a friend?
Who would you phone?
Hey, Caitlin, how do you know Dave Warner? Is Dave Warner from Queensland?
No. Talk to me about everything you know about Caitlin Ponga.
He's got blonde hair. Because he didn't even represent Australia, did he? He represented New Zealand.
Ponga?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Ponga hasn't played for Australia. Played for New Zealand, Maori. Played for Queensland, obviously. I mean, I've asked you, tell me everything about Caitlin Ponga, and you said he has blonde hair.
No, because I'm trying to work out, like, he won the Dally M. How many connections do I have to make?
You basically need one more. Like, you need the Caitlin Ponga to someone connection will then get you to David Warner.
Is that person a rugby league person or a cricket person?
Rugby league. Your clue is that you have to find a rugby league player that has potential, you know, quite a close cricket connection. This is one of the greatest NRL players ever, and they had a little cricket dalliance, should I say.
Like a Warnie playing for St Kilda, sort of.
Exactly. That sort of vibe.
See, but I follow cricket so not at all.
But this would be a thing that rugby league fans would more not. They don't know it because it's about cricket. They know it because it's about one of the greatest rugby league players ever.
Andrew Johns?
Correct. But I've given you the answer here, but so we'll say you've...
So what's the... So yeah, Andrew Johns...
So this is the connection. We'll say you didn't get this week's.
Andrew, I know that Andrew Johns played cricket.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, no. I'm piecing it together now.
Mm.
But I'm just sitting here looking like an
complaining
idiot
complaining that I've put cricket in it when you know it.
And it's... I can't believe I messed this up. You've given me Caitlin Ponga... Andrew Johns.
Yeah, two of Newcastle's absolute favourite sons.
Truly.
Okay, so for people who don't know the connection, Caitlin Ponga and Andrew Johns, I don't need to explain that one. The Andrew Johns to David Warner one is the most interesting, which people might remember. They might have forgotten. They might be new to T20 cricket. Back when T20 cricket started in Australia, it was state v state. So they didn't have like the Sydney Sixers and the Sydney Thunder and the Hobart Hurricanes, and they were just state v state. So New South Wales would play Queensland, South Australia, Victoria. As a publicity stunt to start this league, New South Wales said to Andrew Johns, do you want to come play for our state side in this T20 comp? He said yes. He played two games. One of them was with David Warner, because who was also playing for New South Wales at the time. He performed horribly, by the way. He batted 11. He got, he was not out for zero. He didn't bowl. Oh, no, he might have bowled one over for nine. Then he might have hit nine runs in the other one. It was a joke. And
see, this is where you led me astray. Because I'm well aware that he had a very short-lived and bad cricket career. But that's the extent of what I know, is that, like, at one point he played a little bit of cricket. It's like enough to be like a sentence on his Wikipedia, which I have memorized. That's all I know about.
So wait, how did I lead you astray in this? I feel like you just didn't make the connection.
Because you gave me cricket.
Don't be angry because you forgot that connection.
I am angry that I forgot that connection. You've made me look a fool on the radio.
I haven't made you look a fool. To remember these two games that Andrew Johns played and link them to Warner, that's tough.
When were these games played?
2007.
I was too busy. Newcastle was flooding at the time.
Sorry. Bring it up.
I was too preoccupied with the Pasha Bulka to care about what David Warner was doing in 2007.
Look, it's a fail for you on Connect 2, but we learned something and we remembered a funny, weird thing in history. You got there with me literally
VAR.
Like carrying you to the different points.
VAR. I got there eventually with no help.
Hey, this is all recorded. The listener will know if you got there or if I literally
this.
Carried you on International Women's Day.
Are you going to embarrass me, a woman, on my day?
Your day. If you feel embarrassed by that, fine. But I don't think you should be embarrassed.
Because I got it.
That was a tough one.
I got it. It was a tough one.
All right, I got it. We got to go. We got to get to the footy. What are we looking forward to? I'm going to say the rest of the AFL round launching. There's three games in the Eastern States. The Giants Pies one is a sellout. Can't wait to see Richmond v. the Gold Coast, the Damien Hardwick game. It's going to be very tantalizing.
I'm actually really looking forward to the Saudi GP. Didn't get to watch Bahrain. I was at the Jonas Brothers. So this is the first race that I get to sit on my couch, watch fast cars go around in circles.
And watch another great place where women strive in that scene. Maybe we'll talk about that next week when more stuff comes out.
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks, Lav.
Thanks.